My name's Jacqueline Van Arsdale. I'm a nutrition and dietetics major from Silverdale, Pennsylvania. The name of my personal narrative is Wounded Identity. I am 8 years old, riding my purple and white bike on an afternoon in September. Deciding to venture out of my own neighborhood, I ride down the street into another community where children are playing in the streets and front yards. A cocky little boy, younger than me, but with an authoritative stance he must have learned from his father, yells to me. I brake and pull over towards the sidewalk where he stands. With hands on his hips, he chastises me. "You're not allowed to play here. You're from Green Meadows, aren't you?" "No," I squeak submissively, never having been very good at lying. "Yes, you are. I've seen you there. You aren't allowed here. Go home." His hateful tone stings deeply. I turn my bike around and pedal home, embarrassed, feeling dirty and unwanted. I never told anyone about the experience until college, but the message that I was worth less as a person because of where I lived has been a slowly healing wound. I grew up in a wealthy suburban county with good schools and plenty of doctors and stay-at-home moms. Unfortunately, I was from one pocket of the school district that defied this general stereotype. The sign at the entrance to my townhouse community read, "Green Meadows," but my peers at school, some of whom also lived there, referred to it as Green Ghettos. The neighborhood included some government housing and hosted a vibrant teenage gang population, plenty of drugs, and abundant alcohol. There were some benefits, such as the many other kids my age with whom I enjoyed hour after hour of unsupervised fun, as few parents thought it necessary to know where their kids were going. I enjoyed this freedom to explore the woods or the underground sewer system and have water gun fights unencumbered by adults. My experience on my bike in the community across the street was the first time I felt the difference between myself and others, but it was a lesson that would be well reinforced. In elementary school, I heard the names other kids used to refer to my neighborhood. I observed how many of my friends were put in the lower math or reading levels and were identified by the teachers as problem children. Sleeping over at the homes of friends from other neighborhoods, I saw their large, clean houses and contrasted it with my small townhouse, only as well kept as my mother could manage after working all day. I constantly brainstormed reasons why I was different from my neighbors. I still had two parents with good jobs. We went to museums on weekends. My parents were involved at my school. The reasons were little comfort. They could never make me good enough. I stopped telling my friends where I lived. I almost never invited friends to my house. Because I kept it a secret, many of my classmates and teachers never realized I lived in Green Meadows. This meant I was present for conversations about how so-and-so was uncool because she was from the ghetto. I decided early on that I would separate myself from my neighborhood and the stereotypes through my academics. I was a bright child, and my parents encouraged me to work hard in school. Their encouragement was nothing, however, compared to my drive to distinguish myself with grades. In fourth grade, I decided I needed to get scholarships to pay for college so I could lift myself out of Green Meadows. I worked to get perfect grades and join every club, activity, extracurricular, and volunteer opportunity. I had a resume of my accomplishments by fifth grade and won my first scholarship at age 13. My life became obsessed with struggling against the stereotypes of my community, trying to prove to others, but even more to myself, that I was a worthwhile, successful person. When I went to play at a friend's house, I was constantly concerned about whether her parents thought I was a good influence. Had I said thank you enough? Was I polite enough or clean enough? Did I volunteer to help load the dishwasher quickly enough? I cared so much about what others thought of me that I wrapped my entire identity in what I perceived others thought. My identity was only what I saw reflected back through the eyes of those around me. If I sensed that someone did not approve of me, I felt like a complete failure. I did not acknowledge these feelings or my experience growing up in Green Meadows until attending an alternate chapel last year about children growing up in poverty. I expected to learn about the experience of children living in inner city Harrisburg and how they dealt with the pain of parents losing jobs or becoming homeless. I learned that these children are at risk of believing it is their fault, that they are somehow less of a person because of their family's difficulties. I had expected to learn about this group of children, to empathize with their situation, and understand what action I could take to help. I did not expect to discover my own deep shame and insecurities. By the end of the chapel, I felt like a wall of bricks was falling over my head, threatening my happy, perfect facade. The description of children wearing the same clothes to school brought back to my mind images of comparing my Salvation Army clothes to my classmates' limited two outfits. I connected with the descriptions of how children felt they were somehow to blame for their unfortunate situations, the pressure to either give up on life and stop trying, or spend all energy struggling to prove myself, and above all, shame. Many memories of feeling inadequate rushed back into my mind, including the story of the bicycle ride. I walked back to my dorm with my mind swimming, wanting to tell someone about these events, but still afraid to reveal the relative poverty I had so effectively hidden for several years. As I wrote in my journal that night, things started to fall into place in my mind. I made connections between my current lack of self-confidence, strong achievement orientation, and the sense of discount I felt as a child. The sense of not being good enough had continued to grow through my elementary and middle school years. Eventually, it came to an ugly head through an eating disorder I have struggled with for 7 years. By seventh grade, I had associated my neighborhood with lazy, uneducated, and overweight people who made poor food choices. By association, I felt lazy, unhealthy, unattractive, overweight, and no good. None of these judgments were objectively true, but my aversion to being associated with my worst fears led me to starve my body. Thinness represented being good enough, more pleasing, and more valuable. The eating disorder quickly devoured even more of my identity. The best description I can give is a negative voice that constantly derided me, telling me I was fat, was a bad person, had said the wrong thing, needed to punish myself with exercise, should never bother anyone with my stupid worries, and that I was undeserving of love, even from God. The pain from my past I could not express with words. I instead expressed with my emaciated body. The eating disorder gave focus and an object for all my self-hatred and unworthiness. Like the children in Harrisburg, I needed to see that I was not bad, and that I have as much value as any other person. Through a lot of therapy, I am starting to heal from past wounds. An important part of this healing has been learning that I have a voice, and that others are willing to listen to my story. As I gain the courage to talk about pain from the past and in the present, I no longer have to express the pain with my body. Using this voice is allowing me to recover a sense of identity, the sense that I have a core to my being that is not affected by how others see me. Sometimes I feel as though I haven't seen this part of myself since I was 8 years old. I still struggle with feelings that I'm not as valuable as others. Writing this paper has been challenging, because as I compare my story to the stories we have read about race, class, and gender, a familiar voice whispers, "You have experienced nothing. No one wants to hear you." I am tempted to discount my own story, to quiet my voice. Resisting this temptation, I will tell my story. I believe a very powerful way to move beyond pain is to acknowledge our stories and see that there are others who will listen. By retelling our stories, we can process meaning and move toward healing. I cannot fix racism or classism, but I can listen to someone's story, acknowledging his or her pain. I can tell my own story, acknowledging my value as a person. My story does not have a conclusion. I feel as though I have just started to unravel a giant knot. The knot is still there, and at this point, I have only frayed pieces of many string ends, still mostly entangled in the knot. I would like to have a strong lesson or moral to my story. It would be great to say that my connection with the other through the alternate chapel allowed me to see the suffering of others in a more intimate way. My reality is that I am still too engrossed in the self-centered task of picking up the pieces of the brick wall that tumbled down on me that night, to have a deep revelation about how that relates to others. I wish I could say that I have fully faced my past, that I would not judge someone else because of where they live. Unfortunately, I cannot. I am only able to face this issue and begin to talk about it because my family moved. I now live in a nice house in a nearby town, close enough to drive by my old neighborhood on the way to church, but far enough removed so no one has to know that I ever lived there. I still feel the stereotypes. Here at college, when I meet someone from my area, I will say that I had lived in Telford, but I will not say I lived in Green Meadows. I am still trying to escape the labels of dirty, lazy, unintelligent, and unattractive that I even now associate with my old neighborhood. I have worked so hard to distance myself from that image. When a friend jokes that I do not clean my coffee cup often enough, I actually cringe because it makes me feel that I cannot escape the image of poverty and uncleanliness I so fear. I am still writing my story. I know one day I want to fully believe God's truth about my value and the value of every other person, including those who still live in Green Meadows. If we can do nothing to increase or decrease God's love for us, then a little girl from Green Meadows is no less worthy a person than a cocky boy from down the street. In seeking to take this from a truth I accept with my mind to one I believe with my whole being, I will choose to tell my story, even as I listen to the stories of others. This is the best hope I can find for personal and corporate healing.
This has been Listen Up, a Messiah College podcast. This episode of Listen Up was produced by Katie Manzullo. For more information or to listen to past episodes, visit Listen Up's website at blogs.messiah.edu/listenup.